Well, it's been a week of dramatic spectacle in China, celebrating the 60th birthday of the People's Republic, designed for their own people to revel in for the world to watch on and draw their own conclusions. One important area of Chinese effort not highlighted, but which is coming through the international ranks fast, is their banking system. We Australians often proudly quote that of the world's 10 safest banks, in terms of ratings and market capitalisation, Australia has 4. Well, China has another 4 of that bunch, and they've moved their whole system into that level in a very short space of time, like about 3 or so years. None of that has escaped the attention, naturally enough, of some Australian bankers. One in particular, the ANZ Group, has big plans for the region, including China, articulated regularly by its ex-Hong Kong veteran Mike Smith. This week, the ANZ opened its first full branch in Chongqing, not on the east side, near the coast, in the usual areas of growth, but in the rural west, where much of the new development is being targeted. The chairman of its New South Wales and ACT operations, Warwick Smith, joins me now to outline why the bank thinks this is a risk worth taking. Warwick Smith, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Geraldine, and good morning to your listeners.
Obviously, this has been a huge week in China with its 60th birthday, Warwick. What did you make of it?
Well, China's, I think the word to use is transformation. I wasn't around 60 years ago, but some of our listeners would have been, and you would not have thought then, when Mao Zedong announced the result of the revolution, the establishment of modern-day China, as it then was, that it would be in the position it is today. I mean, this has been quite a transformation that's taken place. It's a one-party state, and it's been successful. The only equivalent is Cuba. Mm. So it's quite an achievement.
If I could ask you even just for your own key impressions of change, like how many years have you been going there now?
I first went there in the very early 80s as a young member of the Australian Parliament. I was then the youngest member of the Australian Parliament on the Liberal Party, and I went to China, fascinated by it. And the changes since then, for example, going to the Olympics for a period of 3 weeks, has been dramatic. And there's several yardsticks that I think most of us that visit China regularly would refer to, and that's one is infrastructure, the dramatic change in infrastructure, things like airports, things that you see when you arrive.
Do you miss airports. Anything about the old China?
I have to say probably not that much, really. Food has improved tremendously. Facilities where you stay, for the average Chinese citizen, things have improved dramatically, which I think is good. Transportation is totally different. You used to be in Beijing and Shanghai and there'd be bicycles without lamps were the main form of transport that you'd see for people within the city. So that's not nearly as prevalent now. Now it's black Audis and Mercedes, and they have a love affair with brands in China. So you're seeing dramatic changes along those lines.
Yeah. Well, that's clearly why the ANZ has identified it as a key opportunity. And as I've said, you had this big opening this week of the first ANZ branch in rural China in Chongqing in western China. Mm. Now, for a lot of our listeners, especially watching that huge ceremony, they say, well, this is a no-brainer for the ANZ. But some very good Australian business brains, I know from first-hand experience, are still quite leery of China. Why are you not?
Well, we are. I mean, going into any new market,
you are leery or you're not?
No, we're obviously cautious and careful. And going into any new market, China is a huge market with great growth potential, and there are other markets that offer that opportunity as well. Perhaps India is an obvious example. But China has just such dramatic growth statistics that in terms of financial services, and it's entering into the World Trade Organization and ascribing to the broader values of how financial markets should operate, gives a great deal of comfort to those that want to be in financial services. There is also a whole range of Australian clients that are very, very busy, both from, for example, architects through to miners. So there's a broad range of Australian client base that's active in China, and they offer an opportunity for banker to be involved. And also there is, of course, a dramatic increase in the average earnings of the Chinese population, and there's been encouragement of...
But are they allowed to bank with you?
They will be allowed to bank, and that's, we're hoping to enter into credit cards and debit card arrangements at this new branch within 12 months, and that will provide lots of opportunities above and beyond the banking, major corporates. And so that will provide a big opportunity, and China's encouraging that. They see benefit in competition. They now provide, of course... if you look at the list of the largest banks in the world by market capitalization, and this has changed dramatically within a 10-year period, the top three are Chinese banks. So the world markets in banking and liquidity and the source of capital has changed dramatically. Some people probably don't realize, but probably the largest export of China today is actually capital. It buys huge amounts of US Treasury bonds, which effectively underpin the US deficit, and it's diversified the direction of that capital into other markets, including Australia, and a whole range of equity investment, obviously strategic resource investment. It has to fuel the metallization process it's described as.
Is that what they call it?
We saw it in Japan, we saw it in Korea, we saw it in Taiwan.
It's like an industrial revolution,
yeah,
really.
And so what we mean by metallization is more fridges, more cars, more steel for greater infrastructure needs, as there's a huge urbanization taking place in China. They are a bit concerned about that. That's why there's a big focus on developing Western China and Central China. And
get away from the possible bubbles on the seaboard, you mean?
Spread the growth. And underpinning the Chinese approach is, of course, maintenance of harmony. You need to spread the growth, spread the benefits to all areas of the country. And China is a vast country, and that's what they're doing with their infrastructure spend. The stimulus package that they offered was just enormous.
Indeed it was. Mm. But I saw Colleen Ryan, for instance, who reports, I think, very well from China for the Australian Financial Review, warning about these, I think it's 31 local governments, who are now allowed to virtually issue their own bonds. I think there's been this big new development or something equivalent. Yep. And she was warning that this... without proper accountability and real due scrutiny, this could be a disaster waiting to happen. Like their form of subprime, you don't see any problems there?
I do share Colleen's observation, and that what we want to see in China is a deep commitment of transparency about the development of their financial markets and proper monitoring. We're lucky in this country. We have a very, very strong prudential approach to our financial markets, and that's been one of the real benefits for Australia during the recent difficulties, because our markets...
Do you think they've noticed that?
I think they have noticed that. They have they have a representative here in Sydney representing the People's Bank, which is their Reserve Bank equivalent. The only other place they have such a person is in London. And they're here because we have been hugely successful. I talk with them on many occasions, and they see that the benefits of the approach that Australia has taken to its stock exchange, its prudential arrangements through APRA to the banks, has been a centrepiece for the success and stability of their financial markets. They know that's extremely important. So the issue that Colleen raises... about the bonds being made available and being pursued in an unscrutinised way or without any sense of what the overall impact will be, is something that the Chinese banks, but more particularly the regulators, are very aware of. I see them in Beijing, People's Bank of China. And so I feel confident that they see the issue. There is, of course, a huge demand for capital within China. There's a huge demand for funds within China to meet its own requirements for the process of metallization. And so we're seeing a growth. The growth for China is actually an internally driven growth,
yes,
as much as driven by the money it earns from exports.
My guest on Saturday Extra is Warwick Smith, who's chairman of the Australian New Zealand Banking Group, the ANZ, for New South Wales and the ACT. And we're talking about developments of the ANZ into China. Just what you said there, very interesting, about the need for capital inside China. Because as I understood it, that was a major problem, perceived as a major problem by the central authorities, that they couldn't get capital to small entrepreneurs out in the provinces. Mm. And the big banks were not lending to small people, which is where you actually needed to start blooming. You needed 1,000 flowers to bloom. Is that where... The ANZ is trying to pitch itself?
We certainly see there's a role for that. And when I say that we're entering into our branch in Liqing and also near Chongqing, and we also hope to be involved in agriculture financing as well, and the issue of debit cards and credit cards once our branch is established will mean that we'll get into that very important market, the SME market, the small and medium enterprise market. And that in conjunction with obviously doing larger transactions and supporting larger investments is extremely important to the mix of banking services that you provide.
But like this is what is so interesting. You will have people who've never before used something like a debit or a credit card, will you? We've got a whole history and race memory of it, as it were. So you're going to be I mean, there are risks here, aren't there?
Well, there
are... As well as opportunities?
But the interesting thing is that the provision of credit is all about an assessment of risk. And the capacity of Chinese to accept the credit at the consumer level and at a higher level has seen the acceptance of that risk as something that's worth pursuing. The adaptability of the Chinese to the emerging financial markets globally and domestically don't give any of us any concern. I mean, there's been a dramatic change and growth in China, and you have to say that's been done with great success. And so we don't have an overly concerned issue around dealing in the consumer market.
Warwick Smith, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much, Geraldine.
And Warwick Smith is chairman of the ANZ Banking Group for New South Wales and the ACT. And if all this coverage this week has actually reminded you that you'd like to know more, you may be interested in a Big Ideas I will present tomorrow on Radio National after the 5pm news. It's like a cook's tour of the history of modern China, and we're following the umbrellas, as it were, as tour groups do, of two China specialists, Dr. Richard Rigby and Dr. Sao Ching Ye. Now, here's a snapshot, first from Dr. Sao Ching, outlining why history matters so much to Chinese people.
You know, in the West, the people, they can't appreciate the historical baggage Chinese have. Always, they haven't recovered from it. So when the Brits and the China negotiated about Hong Kong, and the Chinese always went back to the issue of the Opium War, and Chinese always mentioned that.
So do Chinese people not look to the future with hope in the same way as the West? Is it a different mindset like that?
Historically, Chinese thought the past always better than the current situation. So the most glorious time always in the past.
Why is that?
Because you romanticize it, you glorify it. All the Chinese sages lived in the past.
Respect for China is going to continue to be absolutely crucial. And that is the one line, I think, that goes right through from the Opium Wars right up to the present day. So many paths have been taken, ideas have been tried. And again, as Xiao Qing says, many of them haven't worked. Of course, some things about the current era are working very, very well indeed. And I think it would not be appropriate to end on too gloomy a note. The fact is that, you know, China's progress over the last 20 or 30 years has in many ways been outstanding. But I think we are now coming to a sort of a moral, cultural...
fork in the road.
Fork of a road. And so I think, you know, for us in Australia, if you want to understand China, we have to, perhaps more than any other Western country, you know, we just have to know more about its history to understand this country and this phenomenon.
So that's Big Ideas tomorrow on Sunday after the news at 5, and I hope to have your company then.